evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 10, 2020. The tracker countries of the United States, United Kingdom and Norway are calling on the South Sudanese peace partners to form the state governments.
Now is the moment for the president and vice presidents, supported by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and the guarantors of the peace agreement, to agree on the selection of governors.
And former rebels are deserting training camps of the Unified Forces for South Sudan.
Most containment sites are nearly collapsed because of the lack of logistic support. There is also a critical lack of logistic support to the training center.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Troika countries are calling on the peace partners in the transitional government of national unity to form local governments and appoint state governors to save the country from sliding into violence. The United States, United Kingdom, and Norway issued a joint statement Tuesday saying any delay in forming state governments could undermine the transitional government and slow down the fight against COVID-19. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
In its statement released yesterday, the Troika said South Sudan's leaders have taken too long to resolve their deadlock over the formation of local governments and appointment of state governors. President Salva Kiir, first Vice President Riek Machar, and the other four vice presidents should put an end to the deadlock and work together to end the increased violence across the country, according to Troika. Jonathan Sebra, a spokesperson at the U.S. Embassy in Juba, says the party should make compromises to appoint governors.
Now is the moment for the president and vice presidents, supported by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and the guarantors of the peace agreement, to agree on the selection of governors and to move forward to govern together for the benefit of the people of South Sudan. Any further delay creates uncertainty that undermines the transition process.
Information Minister Michael Makwe tells South Sudan in Focus that earlier efforts to reach a consensus on governance and other state issues was interrupted because most members of the presidency tested positive for coronavirus.
The presidency could not fit because, according to the agreement, the quorum for the meetings of the presidency is 4. And the presidency could not fit because 3 of the vice presidents were tested positive. And that was the first vice president, then the vice president James Wani, and vice president Hussein Abdelwage.
Makwe says hundreds of VIP protection forces who were to be trained and deployed are still in training centers because of COVID-19. Sebra says the ceasefire agreement the government signed with the holdout groups has since collapsed with renewed fighting between government and National Salvation Front forces, especially in central Equatorial State.
We are deeply concerned at the increased levels of violence across South Sudan. This causes immense suffering for the people of South Sudan, puts in jeopardy any gains that have been made, and has implications across the region. In Junglei, the vacuum created by the lack of governance has exacerbated cycles of intercommunal violence. In central Equatoria, the ceasefire signed in January between the government and non-signatory groups has broken down, and we have seen heavy fighting between forces in recent weeks, with villages destroyed and their communities displaced.
Sebra says the fighting could also hamper humanitarian access to people in need. Civil society activists have also petitioned the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body that monitors the South Sudan peace process, over what they say is the slow and inconsistent nature of implementing the peace deal. Manawa Peter Gatkwot, the Minister for Irrigation and Water Resources, who is also a spokesperson for the SPLM-IO, could not be reached for comment after repeated calls were made to his cell phone. Gatkwot later texted he was busy in a meeting. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
still on the issues of peace, the chairperson of the group overseeing the implementation of the security arrangements in South Sudan says soldiers are deserting their training camps due to hardships. The chairperson of CITISAM says a lack of support and delays in graduating the troops forced soldiers to leave training camps. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
He's speaking at a meeting in Juba yesterday to discuss the challenges with implementing security arrangements. CITISAM VM Chairman Teshom Magemechu Aderio said the cantonment sites and training centers are not getting the support they need from the government.
Most cantonment sites are nearly collapsed because of the lack of logistic support. There is also a critical lack of logistic support to the training center. Other concerns such as lack of training syllabus at the centers and lack of clear directives on the date of graduation and funding.
Major General Martin Abucha, who represents the SPLA-IO in the ceasefire monitoring body, agrees with Gemechu. He says keeping soldiers at the training site for long stays, coupled with poor living conditions, has prompted many soldiers to leave the cantonment sites.
This is a critical issue that I think we should also pay attention to. It's the issue of graduation of these forces. These forces, you keep them in the training center for an indefinite period of time, they'll get frustrated. They have no hope. They see no hope. So what will they do? They'll just go away. These forces are living on torment sites and they're going back to the neighborhoods without these weapons collected.
Abucha said several officers have died at the Rajav training center due to a lack of medical services and not enough food. Colonel Dominic Leon is one of SSPDF soldiers at the Lologo training center southeast of Juba. He's speaking in Arabic. He says more than 3,000 soldiers were cantoned at the site since January this year and were supposed to graduate in February, but that didn't happen.
In the morning, when a whistle blows, 15 to 20 people turned up for parade. Most of them have left, some have gone back home, and others have gone to the bush to burn charcoal. Those whose homes are in Juba have gone home because they are lacking the basic needs. Those who are with me, in the same 10 were 12 but have left. And now there are only 4 of us.
Lieutenant Colonel Alfred Futio Baraka, the SPLA-IO commander for Western Equatoria, says some of his forces have resorted to farming to produce food for themselves.
We have spent 7 months now and no one cares about the cantonment. And the government is not thinking about the cantonment. For us in Western Equatoria, the soldiers have joined the civilians to farm because there are nothing to eat. As for me, I came to Juba to look for food and 2 months later I have nothing, not even a sack of sorghum.
General John Daniel of the South Sudan People's Defense Force says the government lacks the financial capacity to expedite the training and reunifying of forces.
Everything has fallen in one hand, which is the government. The government, for sure and sincere speaking, is overloaded. To facilitate the training center training, that big number, all of us knows, is not a very easy job. And the government is having only 2 sources of income. We have this oil, which the price has gone to zero. And the other income was these goods, clearance, that the little money we are getting at the borders. And with the presence of the coronavirus, we could not have any collection at the border. Now it becomes a big problem even to do anything.
Under the terms of the peace deal, the parties were supposed to canton, train and create a unified force by the end of the pre-transitional period, which expired in February. Despite 2 extended deadlines, the parties have failed to meet their commitments but went on to form a partial unity government. Governors of the 10 states have yet to be appointed. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
The Catholic Bishop of Yambio Tombora Diocese in Western Equatoria State says the area has no capacity to handle any potential outbreak of the coronavirus. Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusala says hospitals in the state have no ventilators and testing kits for COVID-19. Kusala says the Catholic Church is doing its best with limited resources to create awareness among the population of the state.
The discovery of this disease in Yambio is alarming. people are not fully aware and they are not taking this very serious. And so we are worried about this. And so I think it's not only for Yambia here, the rest part of the country too is already in difficulty. Leave alone Juba, where you just live for the day, not for tomorrow. You are just there to see what would happen.
Bishop, let's talk about the issue of the lockdown. I mean, a lot of people have been advocating for a total lockdown of the country. But what we hear from the ordinary people, you know, in cities like Juba, they say a lockdown is a death sentence to those who have no money, who have no means of survival, who are just there, you know, living from hands to mouth. How do you react to that?
Actually, my heart to go with the people, the ordinary people, for sure. If there is a total lockdown, it is going to be deadly for the local people, for the ordinary people. And they will not be able to survive, leave alone, you know, water, everything they have to depend on. A total lockdown would have been, first of all, for the whole country, all the borders sealed properly, and then no any other communication with the outside world. That would have been the best done inside. And in the countries where people provide for their people, there's no worry about the lockdown. And this has been said over and over, that we have so much resource in this country that would have been able to cater for the people, the handful of people in Juba. It would be able to feed at least Juba. But you will see no way that the government would be able to provide the feeding for the people. That's why it's a death sentence if you put a lockdown. And I think some villages could be blocked, and then government, at least in Juba, should provide services for people in those villages. Then after the states, there are some states that can survive feeding on what they have, but there are other states who do not. Well, now rainy season is coming in, life will become difficult in some parts of South Sudan. Therefore, food should be provided. We using all the what we have, the resources we have. Can we say the income that comes from the oil, since people are not being paid salaries, why don't you let them use that money to buy food for those areas where there's no food, and then protect people from this disease? Because not doing so, we are going to have more deaths than those who have died already of the gun and suffering which had already been in South Sudan.
Let's talk about facilities in Western Equatoria. I know there's Yambio Hospital, there is a hospital in Nzara, there is a facility in Lirongu, and then you have Meridi. But are these facilities really prepared to handle any potential outbreak of COVID-19? Because
honestly, as you said correctly, those are the things we call a hospital. We have the hospital in Yambio, which some work has been done there. But it cannot hold the pandemic, honestly. It can't. Because if the number of people, you know, have COVID-19, the disease, coronavirus affects, it needs isolation. The place that the NGOs have been thinking where to put people is not quite big enough. And then there's no ventilator and whatever medical support that can be provided. So we have Yambio, and which is run by the government, and we have Anzara, which is run by my diocese, and then Meridi, also supported by the government and the NGOs, and Tombora and Mundri. But honestly, the services in this hospital needs a lot of support. As I see, I get a lot of worries, because if this disease truly is going to go and rampage, affecting the people, it's going to be deadly. These hospitals will not support this. And by the way, people even don't know they have the disease, because there's no testing machine in the area. You have to get all the samples and send it down to Juba. And it delays, and you don't know who is who, and this is not constant. It is really, really a worrisome thing. So facilities we have are not well equipped. We only they put them there, that this is what we have. If the disease becomes an issue, we would use what we have. So it is like, you know, the last resort one has, you put at the disposal of this particular thing. So honestly, it is not. So those hospitals are not ready fully enough to combat this pandemic as I see it.
That's Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kosala, the Catholic Bishop of Yambio Tomboro Diocese. He was speaking to me via WhatsApp from Nairobi on Monday. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Darfur militia leader hands himself to the International Criminal Court. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country internationally has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly, and you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country, at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modul. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some government officials who recently tested positive for COVID-19 in South Sudan say people should not panic if they contract the coronavirus. South Sudan's deputy foreign minister, who has recovered from the virus, says South Sudanese should stop denying the disease exists in the country. Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister, who also tested positive and recovered from the virus, says the best way for patients to fight the pandemic is to effectively follow instructions from medical workers. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng was one of many members of the dissolved South Sudan High-Level Task Force on COVID-19 that tested positive. Deng told the South Sudan in Focus last week that he recovered from the virus simply by following the advice of medical workers.
I followed the protocols on what I supposed to be doing, and I always called the Minister of Health just to tell them how the temperature, how the oxygen and all this in the body are. And so far, so good.
Deng says all South Sudanese should strictly follow the preventive measures advised by the WHO and the Health Ministry to contain the spread of the virus. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui, another former COVID-19 task force member who recovered from the virus, says when he tested positive, he did not feel any symptoms of COVID-19. Makui says while in isolation, he treated himself with aspirin and herbs.
This natural lemon, the sour lemon, then the honey, the ginger, the garlic, the aloe vera, these are the things that I'm taking. They are naturally brought and they are boiled together. And after that, after boiling it, you add some original honey onto it and you take it. It is bitter, of course, but it is a treatment.
There is currently no known cure for COVID-19. But some herbs and certain foods are known to boost the immune system. Deng encourages South Sudanese need to realize that the disease exists in the country and should work to contain its spread.
Let us not be in denial. Let us not stigmatize people. is something that has happened and people must accept it. And if we accept it, then it will be easy for us to get a cure for it and to help each other.
Makwe says some people who test positive for the coronavirus get frightened and their health status deteriorates, partly because of the stress caused by worrying about their outcome.
Because this thing has started in the first world, it's very seriously magnified to the extent that it has frightened everybody and people are in panic. So there are some people when they are informed that you have tested positive, they psychologically die. They die because of psychological impact which they have already heard from others.
Deng says some good things came out of his period of self-isolation.
For the last 14 days, the geography of the house, I came to realize that I didn't know it very much. I didn't even know some of the family members well. And it gave me, whenever we take it positive also, it could also be a learning process.
Makwe says people should adhere to all preventive measures, including frequent hand washing, practicing social distancing, and wearing face masks in public. South Sudan has recorded 1,606 positive cases of COVID-19, including 20 deaths and 15 recoveries, according to the Health Ministry. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A former Sudanese paramilitary commander who has been indicted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes in Darfur was arrested and transferred to Hague to face trial. The court issued a warrant of arrest against Ali Kusheb in April 2007 on 50 accounts of war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Darfur. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
ICC spokesperson Fadi Al-Abdullah says Kusheib voluntarily surrendered to authorities while in the Central African Republic.
Based on that, the court, with the support of various actors, including the authorities of the Central African Republic and of the UN mission in Central African Republic and other states as well, organized the arrest and the surrender of Mr. Kusheib to the ICC.
Kusheib was known as one of the top leaders in the tribal hierarchy in Wadi Saleh locality and a member of the paramilitary group, the Popular Defense Forces. Prosecutors say Kusheib commanded thousands of Janjaweed militia from August 2003 until March 2004. He is charged with implementing the counterinsurgency strategy of the government of Sudan, which resulted in war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. Prosecutors say Kusheib personally participated in the murder, torture, and rape of Darfur civilians between August 2003 and March 2004. Abdullah says Kusheib will answer those charges in The Hague.
What's going to happen next is first a hearing that we call the initial appearance hearing, in which the judges will make sure that Mr. Kusheib understands the charges that are brought against him and start discussing the procedure to come.
Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and his former defense minister, the state minister of interior, and a rebel commander are also accused of committing war crimes in Darfur and were indicted years ago by the ICC but have never been turned over to the court. Sudanese political analyst Abdul Munaim Himmat says the arrest of Kusheib came as a result of the change in government in Sudan as well as international pressure.
It is also an indication that the Sudan revolution is beginning to besiege those who are accused of war crimes in Darfur. There are many reasons pushed Kusheib to surrender, among which the international blockade, the loss of support, and perhaps a moment of weakness.
Himmat says Kusheib's arrest gives hope to the victims of war crimes in Darfur and their families that justice will be served.
It is an indication that justice will be done sooner or later. It will be an encouraging step to chase other ICC-indicated persons in Sudan. Surrender of Kusheib will increase public pressure on the transitional government of Sudan to the necessity of handing over the rest of accused
In February, Sudan's transitional government indicated that it was willing to hand over Bashir to the ICC, but has yet to do so. Bashir is jailed in Khartoum on corruption charges. Himmat says handing over former officials accused of war crimes like Bashir and his colleagues to the ICC is essential to achieve lasting peace in Darfur and Sudan at large. He says it would also help build trust between the people of Darfur and the transitional government. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Sudanese in the capital Khartoum have welcomed the detention of the Darfur militia leader Ali Kusheb. Some residents of Khartoum describe it as a positive move towards achieving justice for war victims in Darfur. The residents say the transitional government should also hand pro-Bashir supporters in custody to the ICC. Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Khartoum resident Imtinan Reddy says she's glad militia leader Kusheb is finally sitting in an ICC detention center, saying it is a good first step towards achieving justice for victims of war in the western region of Darfur. Speaking in Arabic, Reddy says the Sudanese government need to demonstrate its commitment to ensuring justice for victims of war crimes in Darfur by handing over all indicated individuals to the ICC.
This is a responsible step from the ICC, that they are serious on implementing their promise to prosecute the wanted list. So, our Sudanese government should be more serious in the coming days to cooperate with the ICC and hand over those in detention.
Speaking in Arabic, Omdurman resident Amin Abdulmajid says Kosheb's handover to the ICC will help relieve some of the pain flooded by war victims, including those who suffered sexual assault in Darfur.
This is a very important step towards achieving lasting peace in the country. The government should also introduce development projects in the war-affected areas and resolve all issues related to refugees, IDPs, and victims of war in Sudan.
Muhammad Abdurrahman Al-Nair, the spokesperson for the Sudan Liberation Movement, Abdul Wahid Faction, praised the government of the Central African Republic for turning over Kusheb to the ICC. Speaking in Arabic via WhatsApp from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, Al-Nair says Kosheb's detention sends a signal to all those who have committed crimes in Darfur that they will not escape justice.
The detention of Ali Kusheb has opened a new hope for victims of war in which they were waiting patiently to see charges and to see charges are put against those who committed atrocities such as massive massacre, ethnic cleansings, war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur in the modern time.
The rebel leader calls on the Sudanese government to go further by turning over ouster President Omar al-Bashir and other former top officials indicated by the ICC.
We call upon the administration of Abdullah Hamdok to fulfill their international commitment and hand over all other individuals to the ICC, including Omar al-Bashir, Ahmed Haroun, Abdul Rahim, Muhammad Hussein, and anybody in the list of 51, in addition to all those who might be suspected later of being involved in the process.
A government source in CAR told the Reuters news agency that Kusheb was arrested in the northern town of Birao and put on a plane to Netherlands yesterday morning. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We'll now leave you with the song Binia Nubi by Budi J. We've been listening to Budi J with the song Binia Nubi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,
Sana. Si bubini ya deto, umoni lwa rumaku.